We are Storage Unpacked, data storage knowledge for the enterprise.
Hi, this is Chris Evans recording another Storage Unpacked podcast. This time I'm at NetApp and I'm joined by Charlotte and Joel. Hi.
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 How are we doing?
We're doing good.
Good, good. Excellent. Who wants to start and introduce themselves first? Charlotte or Joel, which one?
I think it's me. Right. So, hey, thanks for coming to our office here, and we're very happy to take part in the podcast. So, hi, everybody. I'm Charlotte Brooks. I work in technical marketing in the hybrid cloud data availability services for NetApp.
And I'm Joel Kaufman. I am a director of technical marketing, and I cover a wide array of data protection technologies within NetApp, including NDAS, or NetApp Data Availability Services.
Which is what we're here to talk about today. So before we get into what NDAS stands for and means, which I'll let you do in a second, Charlotte, the reason that we initially had a discussion about this was because, Joel, you and I met at... Did you have a beard when I saw you then?
I did.
At NetApp Insight.
I did, and I had the big handlebar mustache.
That is, I was just trying to work out what was the difference, and there we are. Now I remember.
Yeah, I grow that every year for Movember.
Ah, okay. That grows quickly then, doesn't it?
It takes longer than that.
Ah, okay. Fair enough. All right, let's move on from that. So, but we met at Insight in... I think that was December last year, December 2018.
That's correct.
And that was in Barcelona, which was a very nice event. One of the things that we talked about there was the NDAS product, but the actual fact that you were putting data into S3 in a self-describing format. And that initially made me very, very interested because I suddenly, like, my ears pricked up when I was, that sounds really interesting. And as part of that, we had a conversation, which, of course, has led on to understanding what NDAS is in the actual platform. So that was the insight of this discussion initially. Obviously, we're going to go into what NDAS is, what it means, and I've already written about it, but this is like a follow-up so we can ask some nice, you know, interesting questions as part of the discussion. So, Charlotte, could you just give us a bit of a background as to what NDAS, what even the acronym stands for, and what the product actually is?
You bet, yeah. So NDAS stands for NetApp Data Availability Services. So given it has, I don't know how many syllables, we abbreviated that to NDAS. And so what it is, it's a hybrid cloud, from its output perspective, it looks like a hybrid cloud data protection solution, right? A nice, super easy interface to create simple data protection orchestration workflows and move your data, as you've said, into S3. And that's nice. I mean, everybody has a nice, simple way to back up data. We've taken a slightly novel approach in that it's all cloud resident, cloud scalable. There's essentially no on-prem infrastructure for the customer to deploy. But I would say the underlying subcurrent of NDAS, which you've already alluded to, is, yeah, it's an efficient, secure way to move data into the cloud. But then it's like, well, what else can you do with that data? You need it for the disaster recovery, for the restore capability, but what other ways can you exploit that data and really extract the maximum value from it? So that's what we're really targeting.
And that's where that's headed.
Yeah.
Okay, so why choose to build a new product, then? Why not just take an existing data protection solution that you may have and use that? What was the rationale for saying we need to start again? Because it sounds to me like you have started again to a certain degree.
Well, what we've done is we've taken some of the underlying technology that NetApp is known for, that has been proven in, you know, literally thousands of customers through many years. And that would be things like our snap mirror, snap diff protection. You know, the idea of a snapshot being an efficient way to take an image of a backup and then send that efficiently is you know, just standard table stakes for NetApp. But then the idea to take a different approach to put the orchestration and the interface of that into the cloud, to use cloud-native storage, cloud compute resources, that gives us the ability both to provide scalability and flexibility for the customer, to move to an operational expense model as opposed to a capital expense model, which, you know, really a lot of people these days are really trying to get things off their books, the CapEx, the assets, the depreciation, all of that complexity, and move to that more flexible, lightweight cloud model. But then having the infrastructure in the cloud, as you say, opens it up to all the services that you can run on that data in the cloud.
Okay, we'll get back to that in a second because that's going to be an interesting angle.
I think the thing that this alludes to more than anything is, you know, so if you look at NetApp over the last 10 years, right, we were on-prem exclusively, and then we started to move our way into a hybrid model, and it was very tentative footsteps. And this, you know, we've gone to this model now where we recognize that a ton of our customers are heading this direction, right? They want to move into that OpEx-only model. They want to move into cloud-resident types of things. And this is really just one of those phases now where we've looked at it and said, okay, even though they're up there in the cloud, what is one of the most efficient ways of getting all this massive estate of data that NetApp has had for years and years and helping them get it up there in the first place? Right. And that's a really interesting, you know, problem, because we're, you know, we're talking on the orders of 20s, 30s. I can't even tell you how many exabytes, you know, that are out there, and people are going, I have it. How do I move it?
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. I think we can come back and talk about some of that detail in a minute, but I would say to add to that, There is a challenge for you as a company, because one of the things that you have that works really well between your products is the features like SnapMirror and the efficiency that comes with that. And I know we'll get into it, but my interest was seeing how you would take those sort of features that you already have, but allow the data to be in such a format that you could still access it without needing an in-the-cloud version of that platform.
Yeah.
And that's where I was interested. So when we deploy this, how does the technology get deployed? How does somebody come along and say, I want to buy NDAS or I want to use NDAS, and where does it get installed?
Right. So we had really two choices. We could go with the SaaS model where we as in NetApp, maintains all the infrastructure and the customer simply purchases a subscription and so on. Or we could deploy it as an application that runs within the customer's data center within the cloud. So in the case of AWS, which is the first hyperscaler we're rolling out with, it would be within their VPC. So we chose to do that the second way in terms of the kind of deployment support that the customer would need in terms of how it could be easily upgraded. And just to give that flexibility without us having to invest in a lot of infrastructure up front, but then allow the customer to control the security, to have that control over the connection. And
So I guess it's an interesting divide then, because what you're saying is you could have built this completely as a SaaS solution, and you would have been self-managing, you would have been running everything. Yep. Then you would have to have put in multi-tenancy, you would have to have layered down security on top of that. There would have been potentially a lot of extra stuff that you would have had to write, and there would have been some challenges, I guess, from a customer's perspective, because customers could say, but hold on a second, my data is in the same bucket or platform with many other customers, and if you lose those keys, my data could be exposed. So I guess deciding to go down the route you did has advantages from a security perspective as well as an operational one. Would
Absolutely.
That be fair to say?
Yeah, I think you know, then the security is kind of a mutual responsibility. The terms of the deployment effort, it's kind of more of a partnership aspect as opposed to just NetApp taking complete responsibility and really abrogating that control from the customers.
So. Right. So I'm a customer. I decided I want to use the platform. I obviously have to have an Amazon account. Which is not surprising if the data is going to be an S3. I'm going to have one anyway. So how do I access that? Is this through a marketplace in Amazon? Is it that sort of deployment model?
Yeah. So we would basically distribute a machine image of the NDAS executable, which you deploy and purchase through the marketplace. That will then spin up all the required compute instances. It will create a catalog, and we haven't even talked about the catalog yet, but I'm sure we will.
Yep.
But that will, you know, create all of the resources within the customer's VPC that are required to set up and run NDAS and start all the services. And the cool thing about this is when we demonstrate this to customers, this takes about 5 minutes. Right, from kind of purchase, click, to having your interface ready to log into and ready to start creating backups. You know, when people see this, they're like, wow, you know, and they think back to how long it took them to set up a traditional backup appliance just to unbox it and rack and stack.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, it's just not even.
But that's the promise of cloud, isn't it, Shirley? I mean, the promise of cloud is it should be that simple that somebody can instance, even if it's a number of different components in an application, that easily. So I guess that's what, you know, you should be expecting cloud to be delivering for you.
Yeah. And that's right. Literally just launch and then NDAS will take care of everything from that point and just present you with a fully deployed backup appliance that's completely all in software.
And ready to roll.
Okay. At that point, you just have to register your resources with it that are required, and that's pretty much it.
And when we say register resources, I guess you're talking about taking data from traditional primary NetApp ONTAP type systems.
Yeah, so that's part of it, right? So the first thing you do when you go in is you basically have to identify what those primary systems are, and we've included in the latest versions of ONTAP we call it a copy to cloud, essentially a little module that's just built in right there. You go ahead and set a token that is provided by the NDAS orchestrator. send it down to that ONTAP system. It automatically peers the relationship, sets it up, and says, I identify that this system is associated with this device. And then at that point, you just have to define the backend S3 bucket in place, and that's...
There's
a little more than that, but that's
not much. I mean, it literally takes about a minute.
Yeah.
And then it will automatically discover anything associated with that gateway system, and everything is created and stored in NDAS's own database, and you're ready to get started.
Okay. So which cloud's currently just AWS at the moment?
Yep. So initially AWS. We're looking at other deployment models, be they other hyperscalers, possibly an on-premises model. You know, these are the things we might take it in the future.
Okay, and what about cloud ONTAP? Because is it called that this week? I'm always confused. I get told off about getting it wrong.
Yeah, so we've changed a little bit. Inside of Amazon explicitly right now, you have cloud volumes ONTAP.
Yes.
Which is it looks like a instance of ONTAP running in the cloud. And then you have cloud volumes service, which is you don't see anything that even remotely looks like ONTAP. It literally is a data service that is provided with its own characteristics that are as close as we can get it.
But in terms of the instantiation of what is ONTAP software running in the public cloud, you can quite happily interface with that.
Right. So NDAS, when we say that it's a hybrid cloud data protection solution, and we always draw our physical clusters and so on. But those clusters that NDAS is backing up or the secondary system that it might be replicating can easily be a software-defined instance of ONTAP, so like the Select platform or a Cloud Volumes ONTAP instance. And we've got some interesting use cases where you could be backing up on-premises systems, and then when you come to do the restore, maybe you just spin up an instance of Cloud Volumes ONTAP in the cloud and restore to there, and then you've got instant DR in the cloud.
That's an interesting, I guess, use case, because that, again, shows the benefit of actually putting this stuff in the public cloud, in the sense that you're now putting that data as the hub of all of your actions, if you like, because now you can reinstance or reinstantiate it wherever you like.
Right, and you've got that flotation, if you like, to distribute the data to wherever it may need to be.
Okay. So right at the very beginning of this, I said that one of the first things that really caught my eye was the idea of self-describing data. And in its own right, that term does seem a bit of an odd term. What do we mean by self-describing data? But from what I could see, that the way you'd written the platform is you've effectively encapsulated the metadata in with the backup data so that it can be read directly.
Exactly. So getting back to your other comment on why did we choose this new approach and not just kind of extend what we had before, of course, we could have just snap mirrored to a Cloud Volumes ONTAP in the cloud, right? I mean, that works today. That's worked for some years now. But with the NDAS approach and having actually no ONTAP instance in the cloud, it's just writing into an S3 bucket. First of all, we don't have the expense and the complexity of maintaining an ONTAP instance in the cloud to manage that data. But the other part is that the format that we're writing in the S3 is not just standard snap mirror format. It's not just dumb S3 format. It's a hybrid format that, of course, supports the standard restore use cases to do a volume level restore or also a file level restore. But it does encapsulate that metadata. So with an interpretation layer, we can now browse down. We can see individual snapshots. We can see dates. We can see metadata. We can see folders, directories, subdirectories, and all of that. So that a in-cloud service, like, I don't know, like an EWS instance or something like that, can talk directly to that S3 bucket and access the data just as if it was a native file system.
Now, I thought that was really interesting for a number of reasons, but the very first one would be that imagine I've been putting tons and tons of backup data into the public cloud for the last 10 years, 5 years even, and then suddenly I come along and somebody says, well, why have we got all these buckets of data? What on earth is in there? And then somebody says, oh, well, we're not really sure. It all looks like odd random file names because whatever the backup product that was writing in some bizarre format that nobody can remember now. And it isn't like when you used to have a pile of tapes that you could just, oh, well, we'll keep them in a box and it won't cost us anything. You have an operational expense to keep a bucket full of data that you're not using potentially if you don't know what it is. And that's a big significant cost. So that to me was the first thing that stood out was that really makes sense to be able to actually separately from any software work out what the data is.
And that use case is actually really interesting because, you know, as we've observed, one of the reasons why S3 has become such a popular format for this is just the idea of a scalable object store. Wow, can't speak today. that can get, you know, forget about terabytes, right? Now we're talking about petabytes in size and distributed and so on. And, you know, the five-year problem that you described isn't just a hypothetical one anymore, yep. right? We're seeing it in a lot of the validated and the regulated industries where, you know, healthcare data, life of the patient plus 10 years, good luck with the half an exabyte of data that yep. some major medical places will have to do. How do you even identify what's there at all and what you have to get rid of and what backup software was used or data management software? This is not a small problem.
No.
Right. And there's that kind of inverse relationship, right? The older the data is, the less likely you're going to have to get it back.
Yeah.
However, if you do get it back, it's really, really important.
Really,
and you'd
critical.
Better be able to get it back. Okay, maybe you don't have to have it a sub-second response time to retrieving a 10-year-old x-ray or what have you.
Right.
But you need it because that's, you know, the patient's life on the line.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's it. That's useful to have self-describing, and that's a great option because at least you can go in and you can look at the data and you can see it from that hierarchical perspective. But it doesn't strike me that that's a scalable scenario to access that directly in the S3 bucket directly and be scanning it continuously. So from what I know of what you've done, you've actually got metadata that's sitting alongside that content, mm-hmm. and that's what you would drive your main search through.
That is one way we could do it. There is a certain amount of metadata encapsulated within the S3 format, which is enough to present the complete, you know, the ACLs and the structure of the data in the S3 and then to those services. We also are maintaining, though, the separate scalable catalogue of the data, which is primarily, in the first release anyway, primarily used to drive a rapid file-based search.
Okay.
So, again, rather than, I mean, you know, whenever we're talking to customers about that, we say, well, how do you restore data? And they say, well, sometimes people know where their data is, and then you can kind of browse down. And that's okay, maybe that works. They know precisely which share or which export or whatever it is. But more often than not, it's like, well, I had this file, and it was something to do with my cat or you know, something to do with my presentation.
And it was around this date that we backed
it up. And you know, then if you're going to start doing the old browse and search, it's literally like a needle in a haystack. So having something that's a bit more sophisticated than that and providing that searchability was an absolute must. And have that be able to scale and grow as the amount of files that you're managing increases.
Yeah. Okay, so that gives people the ability to do a more structured search, and that's obviously going to directly translate into scalability. What does it mean in terms of moving this discussion a bit further forward? Because at the end of the day, okay, creating a new backup solution is one thing, but this data is surely valuable for a lot more than that. And this was another reason why initially when we first talked, I thought, well, this is, you know, a huge option to go and do a lot of things against this data. How would you then expose that data for customers to do other things on it?
Well, you know, I think at this point it's going to be, we're going to learn a lot from our customers and how they would like to deploy that. And we hear a whole gamut of responses. Yep. Some customers, and they're perhaps like the service providers or they're more advanced in cloud and so on, they look at the kind of prototypes that we have for accessing the data and they say, if you give that to us, we'll be happy. We'll just let us have this translation layer and we will write our own services in cloud and we will go do that, right?
Right.
And then at the other end of the spectrum, you've got, well, what I'd really like is an easy button, like you know, we can't see it because we're just talking, but the NDAS application itself is very stripped down. It's very bare. It's very simple. And if I had something that just says, click here to spin up a compliance cluster or,
right.
you know, click here to spin up this analytics, it would automatically create all the resources that I need in AWS. I could give it some parameters. It would spin up, mount a snapshot, come out with the answer, 42 or whatever, and then spin everything down again. And you know, I wouldn't have to know anything about Amazon or the services or whatever. So we're getting a complete range from, I want to completely handcraft this and do it myself. You just give me the tools to, oh, I don't want to know anything about this. Just let me click a button and then return me the results. But I think in either or in both cases, it's all about, I don't want to have to maintain a permanent set of expensive infrastructure to do what maybe only be an occasional analytics requirement or a data discovery or whatever. I want to just be able to spin it up, the minimal cost, get the answer, throw it all away, you know, throw the infrastructure away, and then move on to the next part of my day.
Right. Yeah. Now, I looked at that, and I should say, of course, we're recording this after we did the tech field day where you presented about the product. So we do have a bit more knowledge, or at least I have a bit more knowledge than I may be trying to portray as part of this discussion. And one of the things that really that showed to me was there was a huge opportunity for an IT department to take the data that they have, that is owned by the business, and offer services to the IT, to the business from IT that could do exactly what you've just described. So the IT department could build a catalogue of offerings that do things like the compliance search or whatever it happens to be, and just give the business a portal into which they can actually consume that. But of course, that does need a bit of work, and obviously somebody's got to pay for those resources being used. But potentially, it allows IT to be a bit more, shall we say, relevant than they may have been in the past, because now they can control the services that are being exported through some sort of portal within the cloud.
Yeah, I think that's precisely it, right? The direction that I would say a large portion of our customer base, and I'm pretty sure in the industry as a whole, is headed to is, how can IT become as efficient as a service provider?
Yeah.
And so because of that, right, everyone, and let's be very realistic, everyone who says, I want to operate like Amazon, fantastic. If you have $20 billion to spend, you can go operate like Amazon. In the meantime, what can we do to help you to get somewhere in that ballpark? And I think that's pretty astute, actually, that when they can start to offer their own catalog of services, whether the ones that are developed in-house or they purchase from someone else and just do a minor integration into this type of data, I think that's where you're going to start to see IT become actually probably more proactive than they have been in the past to a large extent.
Definitely. You look at what we might have said 10 years ago was a service catalog. It would have been a service catalog of infrastructure, and we would have said, you know, I can give you some storage on this tier or that tier. I can give you this and servers. Whereas now you could say, I can give you a service. And the service is consumable just like you would consume infrastructure. And that is hopefully what cloud really should be.
Yeah.
At least I think so.
Right. Because, you know, the users are doing this stuff anyway, right? You know, we talk to maybe like universities, research type institutes, you know, your PhD students or whatever, they know what's available out there in the clouds, right? And they will just go out there and spin it up themselves. They'll get their own account. And of course, this is all creating expenses on the IT budget. So they're going to do that anyway. So if IT can take some control and have some governance and some chargeback or whatever over that, it's still giving them the responsiveness and the flexibility that they need, but it's now centralizing the costing and the, you know, potentially making that a lot more efficient.
Right.
Yeah. Even showback would work.
Yep. Yeah, most people don't even want to do that, do they? Which amazes me, because the very first job that I was in 1987, we had chargeback. We had billing and chargeback. And, you know, I look at it and go, why is nobody doing that? That's, to me, is the most natural thing in the world, to be charging your customers for the use of resources. But there we are. Okay, so as we just touched on the idea of the university then, Charlotte, can you give us any examples that you've come across where customers have done things that you haven't expected, or the use cases where you can look at it, or even just tell us some use cases that you've developed yourself where, you know, people might think, well, what does it really mean to use this data? What could we do with it?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a kind of a journey, because as we present NDAS, you know, we start off with, yes, it's a really simple backup application. It's all in the cloud and so on. And we start talking about the metadata and the data reuse. And usually people don't necessarily get it the first time around, but we kind of continue on. Then we kind of slowly ease back our way into it when they start to think, oh, over time I could have a year or 2 years or 5 years worth of data. What could I do with that? And the answer is really different for every single customer or every different industry, whether it's, I don't know, maybe it's something like I collect video and I would want to go back and look over history and see how the traffic patterns in an airport change or something like that. Or maybe it's research, or it's I'm making an electronics gadget or whatever, and I archive off a project. And then maybe we had a failed development, right? And we tried to develop a chip, didn't work. So, okay. Move on to the next. And then 2 years later, something changed and someone goes, wait a minute, we did something like that way back. What if we could get that and kind of mine that, find out what it was there, get the important stuff out of this old data set, and then move on and apply it and rehash it and so on and make it work this time. So how
does that work? Because I was thinking that through as you were just explaining that as an example. And I was thinking through, what examples would I have? Well, the first thing I did was immediately I dropped back to my own awareness, which is infrastructure. So immediately I started looking at going, oh, I could tell you how many times you've that VM's been backed up, or how many VMs you've had on this system that have grown, that, which is totally the wrong level for me to be thinking about this, of course. I should have been thinking higher up the stack. How do you help customers to realize what the value of that data is? Is that a challenge?
It's an art. Okay. It really is. Charlotte alluded to it. We've had customers come in with a use case of, I have, half a billion files, and I generate that every 3 to 4 months.
Wow. Okay.
So people are constantly looking for old segments of these files for various analytics purposes for this particular industry. Help us, please, because right now we're sprawling across this huge estate with these custom apps and everything, and it sounds like we could just write one thing to target this and be done. On the other end, we've had customers who sit there and look at it. I think there was a financial services customer who basically said, we just need control of our customer transaction accounts, and we literally do not know today, or it's too painful to sit there and say that for these, you know, business level customers, how do we even deal with protecting their data in an isolated manner across, you know, 10,000 customers at a time? So if we could spin it up, you know, on a per instance and then offer a service on top of that to help them do certain things. So it's really, really varied. It almost requires, as we've noticed, we've become very thin experts on a lot of different industries very quickly. To have these conversations.
Well, and I think it's important who we're having the conversations with. If we are talking just to the standard, you know, I'm the storage person, that's what I do, I do infrastructure, then sure, and not to kind of bag on you or anything, Chris, but they probably are going to come up with, oh yeah, how was my VMs utilized and this kind of thing. But when we talk to the business owners, and then even some of the IT people, and you see this in different levels of customers, some of the IT departments are much more outwardly focused. They have much better relationships with their users, with their end users, and what they're trying to do with the data. But then you go and talk to those people. They're the ones who get it. It's like, oh, yeah, this is what I could do with that data. And so it's really giving IT the tools to make themselves more relevant and to, you know, really prove their value, not just as a sheer service provider, but as a real value add.
Yeah. The business line, I think the commonality that I've seen is that the line of business owners think accelerate business, and IT tends to think of, hang on, this acceleration's about to hit me, how do I deal with it?
Yeah.
And so there's a little bit different mentality there.
I've sat in the middle bit between the two, really, and sort of bridged both the line of business and the IT department and ended up having to work out how we could deliver what the business wanted, but actually not break the rules of what we weren't allowed to do in IT. So a lot of the time we try to be creative and say, well, we could try and amend the service catalog in this way, but it's not really official. So it's a challenge, and I guess that's possibly where the industry is going, is to we need people who've actually got that ability. And it just, as you said, justifies why IT is still relevant to where we are.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, even to this day, we're still learning on, I mean, there's some customers who come in and are like, okay, we've had this conversation before, but, you know, probably what, one out of every three EBCs, there's always Charlotte coming back and going, we learned something new today.
Yeah. Which is great. You know, which is an ongoing thing. So in terms of the platform itself, is it under general release? Is it still beta?
So we thought, because it's a new product, it would be very valuable both to some of the early access customers themselves as well as to us from our learnings to have a pretty extensive beta.
Right.
So that's what we've been running in the last couple of months. And at this point, we're pretty much ready to go GA, just kind of tweaking a few final things. Because, you know, it's a release one product. It doesn't do everything. It doesn't you know, slice bread at this point. But what it means is that we have an infinite number of dimensions of different areas that we could enhance, innovate in. So those customers who've chosen to come on board with us early are really getting good bang for the buck, if you like, in terms of influencing that roadmap in the short to medium term. So,
and it is the potential, perhaps, where this could go, simply because it's the potential of what the data offers and how you can analyze it and do something with it, I guess. That's the thing that, again, going back to the very beginning of our conversation, stood out for me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask, because I have to ask, but what can we expect in the future? Is there anything you can sort of give us a little teaser about where you might be headed towards, or Are you allowed, or are you going to just give me that face that just says, I'm not allowed to tell
I'm
you?
I'm trying to figure out what I can tell you pretty explicitly here. So the general direction, the initial use case for infrastructure, you know, we're very clear, is getting the data into this format in the cloud, which really means there is a data protection component to it, right? If you have if you have a copy in one format on-prem, you have a second copy in the cloud in a different format because it's not straight waffle anymore. So it truly meets that splitting, that bifurcation of the, you know, you can't have this data in the same format on the same thing. So it meets those needs. You know, it's probably easy to figure out that there's basic data protection and potentially like disaster recovery types of things that we alluded to with, you know, spinning up a copy of cloud volumes on tap and then attaching there. Beyond that, unfortunately, it is really a case of what are the services and the access models that are being developed. And that's the tough one that we can't give away too much on right now because those are the beta customers who are really helping define that pretty extensively for us.
But can I ask the question then, will customers or end users be able to build their own services and or will you partner with people to bring catalog services to that?
Build your own, absolutely. Partnering, you'll have to wait to see a little bit. Watch this space.
Well, and on that note, I think I'll thank you for both very much for joining me, and I look forward to seeing what we can find out in the next time we meet.
Oh, fantastic.
But for now, Charlotte, Joel, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.